I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room. So you wanna be a rider, well you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed in the rant room. We let that shit up off our chest. You never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the craft of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want. Welcome to the rant room.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest, and you guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room, where we keep it real, we keep it opinionated, we keep it what, Delilah?
Game all day.
Yeah. On this show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture, but our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft, and shit like that. You hear her voice? My little sister in the building. Y'all missed it earlier. She was about to rap for us. Y'all missed it earlier.
No, he's mistaken.
Delilah Ali Raja in the building, actress, writer, producer, all kind of hyphenates I'm missing. Queer activist, everything.
Yeah, there's a few. And the founder of Black Queer Joy.
Yes, indeed.
And filmmaker.
Yes, indeed. Dope ass filmmaker, dope ass actor, all that shit. Thank you for coming. Thank you for hanging out with me.
Thank you for having me come play.
Yes, indeed. So if you guys are grown, we're going to go ahead and get into the show. So today, we got one of the OGs in the building out here killing the game. Ooh. Y'all know how she is. Y'all seen her out there doing all the stuff. She got her podcast. She over there being an executive director, director of development over with, Edmund Entertainment, Tracy Edmonds over there, producer, writer, all kind of things. I'm missing some other hyphenates. We'll get into them. Rosalind Y. Jackson in the building. Welcome to the show, girl.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. How you guys doing?
We're good.
good to be here.
Thank you. So we're just going to jump right on in.
Okay.
Tell everybody where you're from, how you got into the game, stuff like that.
All right. Well, I was born in Arkansas.
Okay.
Little Rock, Arkansas. Okay. We moved here when I was like two or so. So raised in Cali. Since I was two. Mm-hmm. Your typical Cali life, went to school, finished school, and then I got into college and I wanted to get into the entertainment industry. Mm. I originally wanted to be a singer.
Oh, wait a minute. We didn't know she had vocals. We might have to put her on the spot.
So we can make a whole song in here. Yes. If I actually had bars, which I do not.
But there's a big but. I can't really sing. So I said, what's the next best thing I could do since I can't sing? So I was like, oh, I want to work at a record company. So I wanted to get an internship. And the first place I thought of was Motown Records. They were here at the time. And so I got an internship there. After that, I was still in college, and then I wanted to get into the movie business because back then there was nothing to major in for the music business unless you wanted to play an instrument. Mm-hmm. So I said, what's the next best thing?
The kids today are like, what's an instrument?
Right. The little thing with the little holes and the keys, and But I said, what's the next best thing that I could major in? And I was like, oh, TV and film. Mm-hmm. And so I majored in that. And then I also needed to get an internship because they wouldn't let us graduate without one.
Right.
And so back then, that's when I believe Soul Food came out.
Right.
Mm. And I was like, oh, I want to work for them.
The
movie.
Okay.
I said, I want to work for them. So I looked them up, and plus I was already familiar with them anyway, because I was a fan of Kenny Babyface mm-hmm. Edmonds.
And she said that like that's her cousin. Look at that.
For those of you who don't know Babyface Edmonds.
And so I got an internship there, bounced around through all a bunch of different departments. And then when I graduated, I went full time and then was still bouncing around to different departments. And I left in, I think, 2003. And then I came back in like 2007. And so I've been there ever since.
Okay. That's rare for people to leave and come back. So
And to stay that long in this industry with a company. People be bouncing around, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's been 1,000 years. So so that's how I'm here.
So you've been, how did you end up working with Tracy then?
Well, like I said, I interned in her office, mm-hmm. and then I became part-time in her office. And then over the years, I was, you know, like bouncing around different departments. And then I became her second assistant. Okay. And then once her last assistant was leaving, she was like, oh, well, you can be my assistant now, Ross.
You know the system, right?
Right. So I became her assistant then, mm-hmm. and been her assistant ever since then. And then got, you know, to where I can advance and do more things than just assistant. Because it's just the two of us there, I still do admin stuff along with producing and development and stuff. So that's where I am.
That's good. That's good. See, the thing that I like about the progress of it all, a lot of times you, and you know this too, Dalila, sometimes you end up at a company and you stay where you are for a long time, and they give you little things here and there, and it's not really enough to make you feel like anything.
Right.
But one of the things I love that I see that Tracy's done is giving you those co-producer credits that allow you to actually produce and learn how to do the shit.
That was really, really generous of her. And plus, when we were filming Games People Play, we did the first season here in LA. Okay. And so I got the full experience of, you know, being on set every day, going to all the to all the production meetings and stuff, and seeing how intricate it is. Like, the day-to-day, you have the different meetings. You have the meetings where you're going over all the props. You have the meetings where you're going over all of the production design, all that kind of stuff, wardrobe, everything. So I got the full experience on that show.
What was the first thing that she moved you up on, where you moved into more of a producerial, and like, how did that feel for you? I imagine if you're coming up through like the internship, like that's like little incremental things that would, did it feel like a big leap actually, or did it not?
It did. The first project I got a credit on was Dion's Family Playbook.
Okay.
So I got a co-producer credit on that. Mm-hmm. So that was fun. And I got to see all of the, how you put together a reality show, you know, because people are always like, oh, those things are so scripted. But I guess, depending on what show you're talking about, it could be. But the shows that we work on, we don't have any of that, you know, scripted stuff. It's like, you know, you do have your planning that you do ahead of time, of course. And you really put together how the show is going to go that day, what people are doing and that kind of thing. So I got to see how it should be done, as opposed to like kind of nowadays people are kind of just like, you know, just doing whatever, making up stuff, and you know.
And I was just gonna say, a lot of people misunderstand what they mean when we say it's scripted. It's not scripted per se, word for word.
Right.
The scenario is scripted. It's so here's the situation. We know that Dalila doesn't get along with Rosalind.
Right.
So we're going to set them up in the restaurant with such and such.
And give them a shit ton of alcohol.
Exactly. And they're like, action, bitch.
Hey, they're like, talk it out. Do whatever you do. Exactly. So whatever comes from that comes from it, you know. But yeah, we don't liquor people up on our shows. But
well, that's good.
But yeah, but you do, like, during the casting process, you do get polarizing, you know, people together. So if you know somebody is very outspoken on a certain topic, and this person over here may be a little reserved about it or conservative about it, you're gonna throw those people together, because we have to have something to look at, you know, during the show. Like, people criticize it a lot, and they're like, well, if we just had some boring people here, you wouldn't tune in.
You would never.
You would not tune in. So we got to have people that have dynamic personalities that is going to make you want to tune in and stay and not change the channel.
And it's the same for us in the scripted world. The same thing for those shows where we are literally putting together our baseball team, our basketball team. You know, you're like, we need somebody to slam dunk. We need somebody to be the forward. We need somebody, whatever. It's the same theory. You need somebody who's got a big, this girl gonna fight. So we're gonna bring her in. You know what I mean? There is a little bit of wanting somebody to be the friction. You know, this person's gonna be really difficult, but really good on the screen. You know
I don't think I ever told you this. I was on the the pilot presentation for the Tila Tequila reality show. Which,
I remember that.
I knew I would have never done the show, but it was like the thing that they did as their proof of concept, right? So they basically paid us like for however many days you stayed on the show, they kept you in the house and they paid you. And then if you got kicked off, and it was like, I got kicked off very quickly because I kept dissipating all the drama and like talking people off the ledge, like causing too much peace to happen. And then like we had to do like this crazy like dress up fashion show for Tila Tequila, and I dressed up as like naughty teacher. And and then like she started asking questions, which funny enough, she asked me what were the seven continents, and there's one that I always forget and things. Mm-hmm. But like I was going through, I was like, there's one I always forget. She said, "Is it Canada?" I said, "I don't think so because I can drive there."
Wow.
But it was just fine. And they're like, "Okay," and she's broke up two fights.
Wow.
And she sounded smarter than Tila. You gotta go, deuces.
I remember that show. That show was wild.
Yeah.
You definitely ain't wild enough.
No. I was messing up everything. I was like healing people, talking to them, like talking them through their problems. They're like, "No, girl, no. You are ruining all of the drama. Go home."
They're like, "We need problems."
So this is a show about writing. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some of your writing. Mm-hmm. Like what type of things move you, and how do you describe yourself as a screenwriter? Like, what do you do?
Well, I like drama. I write drama.
Okay. TV, film, both? What?
Both. Mm-hmm. Both. But I prefer TV now. Mm-hmm. I started out with movies, but I moved over into TV because TV seems more fun.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you get to tell a longer story. But yeah, so I just started writing. I haven't had anything produced yet, but we're working on that. Coming up a little something.
Mm-hmm.
But
put some good juju on it. Put some good juju on it.
Don't forget my 10%.
Right. So yeah, so just I love dramas. I really want to write a some kind of spy film,
because
I have this obsession with like spy films or anything that got to do with like the CIA, special ops, like. I'm like so drawn to those.
Mm-hmm.
And then especially if they're woman driven.
Okay.
Like I like to see like, you know, women kick ass, you know, and those kind of things like that. So that's what I'm gearing up to write something like that. But I got to do a little research.
See, it sounds like when you describe yourself, you might go into the, I love those action spy films where women do such a, like, you can figure out that little twist thing, you'll have a nail.
Like the Killing, the Killing Eve type of situation.
Yes.
Sandra was so brilliant. Yeah.
Right. Yes.
Right.
Stuff like that.
Okay. That's dope. I like that.
Salt. Like that. There was one, what was it called? The Old Guard with the...
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah,
Gina,
that was so
Prince
good.
Blackwood directed that. It's incredible. I've watched that movie more like over and over. I love it.
Yes. I was hoping they would have a part two.
They are having a part two.
Oh, they are? Oh,
yeah,
good,
Gina's
good,
not
good.
Directing that one, but she's one of the producers on it. And I can't remember her name right now, but there's another black woman directing it, though. She handed the reins for the directing over to another black woman.
Oh, that's
director.
Good to hear. Good to hear. I love that movie.
Yeah, me too. I like comic book or graphic novel derivative material really like lights me up. I also like spy things. Like I like Slow Horse. Have you watched Slow Horses yet on Apple TV?
No.
Oh, it's fun. It's not women led, but there are like powerful women throughout the whole thing. It's just a very good series. British.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, and the other one I love was Special Ops. With Zoe Saldana.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That was so good. I'm hoping it comes back. I haven't heard anything about it. But I'm like, please let that one come back. It was so good.
I love
it. What show was that?
It was called, the subtitle was Special Ops. I forget the main title.
Huh.
I think they did a series of Special Ops. I'm not sure.
I need to look that up.
Well, that one was standalone. But I forget the main title of it. But it was something Special Ops.
Okay.
But yeah.
It sounds like one of those, like my husband loves those type of shows.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always like just using generic Special Ops, you know. The Grand Canyon or whatever.
I'm like, I'm trying to look it up.
They do all the different little things in different like cities or whatever.
Right. Yeah. But yeah. So I love stuff like that. That's what I would like to write. But like I said, I got to do my little research and you know, because you got to get technical with that kind of stuff, because you can't just like make something up. Like, no. Military would never do anything like that. So right. Really got to get in there and research.
I think the key to those, I've written one or two of those projects, is espionage.
Yeah.
You know, like when you can figure out, you got to have at least three big twists where it's like, oh, we thought it was going that way. It's like, oh, it's not that killer at all. It's
It's like all the red herrings. And the special twists. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like I like the ones too where they like do like clandestine organizations. Mm-hmm. Like you know, like in Scandal.
Right.
Like you have B-13. Mm-hmm. But like it's because a part of what happens with that is that you don't have to know all the technical stuff because they do shit you ain't supposed to do. Mm-hmm. Like they go around some of the stuff. So it kind of gives you freedom to play a little bit more with like what you want to do for your twist for them to be interesting, I think.
Yeah. And I found it. It's called Special Ops Lioness.
Lioness.
I've heard of that one.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember that.
My wife has been trying to get me to watch that. Maybe I'll pick it up if you liked it.
It's so good. It
she really
is so
has.
Good.
She's like, come on, babe. I was like, I don't know if I want to watch the military.
Is the climate weird right now?
No, not at all. I love watching more and more things about war right now.
I always watch dark stuff. I'm like, I don't know why. Like, I love, like, my favorite show. My favorite show of all time is Scandal.
Yes. Okay, so we hear.
We see each other.
We hear. Okay.
I'll let y'all slide.
My second favorite show of all time is House of Cards.
Okay.
Yeah, so I like dark stuff, like, just...
So political, you like political dramas too.
Yeah, and I don't know why. Like, I like political shows.
But you got to dig into your why, though. You got to have to.
Yeah, something about it. Like, something about, like, political shows, and I watch a lot of cop shows.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm like, why? I'm kind of against these things.
Yeah, I'm kind of against copaganda, too, except for I still like them. I think that there's something, at least for me, about the fact that you get the mystery part of it and the question, and I like to kind of I like puzzles. I like that kind of puzzle. Mm-hmm. But then you also know there's going to be an ending that wraps up, which in life it's not. Yeah. And so it gives me that satisfaction of feeling like with everything else that's up in the air all the time, that I get a sense of like a cathartic experience of being able to see it get closed instead of being left open. Do you know what I mean? And like political dramas I love too, just because like I love the intrigue and kind of like the machinations they'd be going through. Like, I love Madam Secretary too, and The Diplomat. And The Diplomat's one of those that kind of like good. It takes on the genre, but then adds like little just slight twists in certain places that you just do not expect. So it's like it takes you on the journey, but it's like instead of it being like what we're used to all the time, it does like a slightly different little thing over here.
The stakes are high.
Yeah. And Tania Miller's Tania's in it, and I just love her.
That's on my queue. I haven't seen that one yet.
It's really good. You will dig that one.
Yeah.
If you like those other shows, like Scandal's one of my favorite shows of all time.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm still in mourning that it's off, but is my show.
Every once in a while, I do a rewatch of it, actually.
It's like, for a rewatch.
I'll do
rewatch.
Like Scandal, Sense 8, and My So Called Life. Every once in a while, I'll do rewatches of the whole series.
I tend to have dark sensibilities myself. I always go dark first. Even when I'm developing a show for somebody or whatever, I'm always, I'm letting y'all know, I'm going to be a little dark at first. So we going to go this way. And then if we have to pull it back, we pull it back. But I'm writing the show for this formerly a type actor right now. And he's making a comeback. And I'm doing this rewrite on the script for them, and it's kind of like a black Sherlock Holmes type of thing, but modern day.
I like that.
Well, that's what it should be.
I like that.
But the problem is it's that mixed with Seven.
Oh.
So you see,
well, serial killer.
But the problem is the tone. Oh. So the execution, that's where the and it's a 140-page script. So that tells you what the problem is.
This is a feature.
It's a feature film.
Okay.
So the problem is, so I was trying to, I met with the producer the other day. I read through scripts. It took me 4 days to read through the script. Because I have so many, I'm like, you know, how am I going to do this? This person, we could composite this character. There's a lot of, it's a puzzle. You know?
Yeah, and then working the mystery back from the end to the
and
beginning.
I'm trying to figure out, like, how much can I salvage? How much can I get rid of? Because I literally read it and I went, I probably need to start over. You know? But
and
I was like, okay, if we salvage it, how can I do it? You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's your job. So I'm always trying to, when I'm talking to these producers, you get a open assignment, you're trying to figure out what's important to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know what's important to me,
mm-hmm.
but I need to know what's important to you.
Right.
Because I might come and completely go this way mm-hmm. without knowing what it is you wanted. So I try to figure out, mm-hmm. okay, you guys knew that there was a problem with the script. What did you think the problems were?
Okay. Which may not even be the actual problem, though.
It's never like, those. Because they start off with this. It'll be simple. I'm like, if it were simple, it wouldn't be 140 pages.
Right. It's like, right. need to know, like, what is it that they loved right. about the story to begin mm-hmm. with?
Yeah. It's the premise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
what did you love, and what is it that drew you into it so that you can find a way to maintain that part right. and then do mm-hmm. the stuff that makes the story math work?
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So... Of course, me, I want to go more of the seven mm-hmm. route because I always go dark.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So I'm like, how far can I go? you know, we have all these. It is kind of a thriller in the essence of it all mm-hmm. centered around this, you know, this guy who can solve these problems. I was like, but that's what makes it interesting to me
mm-hmm.
is how the serial killer kills people.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that makes it dark again. But it keeps it in within a certain tone.
Yeah.
But this actor is known for being more funny.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
So I'm like, okay, do we want to keep that, or are we trying to show that he can act?
Okay.
You know what I mean? Which mm-hmm. way are we going?
I mean, there is a way to do both, but it's but that does something with the tone. There's thrillers Completely. That have a little bit of a sure. taste of that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, did you ever see, well, but it doesn't have like funny, like The Alienist?
Mm-mm.
It was a series, Mm-mm. like it's a period piece that's like basically... this set of three people who basically start doing detectives. One's a woman who wants to be a detective, but back then they weren't letting any of the women do right. it or whatever. So okay. there's like dark stuff that's happening in the city for like, I think it was two or three seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And it does get very dark in certain parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it also, like, the chemistry between the actors and the different things does a different thing with making it interesting. And you sometimes get a little bit of like, the more funny in parts of it, but it's right. not really funny. It's really, right. you know, a thriller. I'm not a dark. I don't go dark. I'll be going dark. I'd be doing drama with levity. It's drama,
uh-huh.
but it's always with levity and always a little bit of sexy, some mm-hmm. romance with a lean
with
into
hope.
Joy. Yes. Yeah.
I always end up with a little bit of hope.
Yeah.
It's just... somebody can die.
right. Yeah, I'm like, I'm not afraid of the ones that, you know, it might have a sad ending.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, as long as that, you know, the main character learns a lesson or something. Mm-hmm. But I'm not mad if somebody got to die,
right.
you know?
I wrote
y'all over here trying to kill people.
I wrote the Black Wall Street script
mm.
8 years ago, maybe, before everybody else was like, oh, I got one too.
Mm-hmm.
This script gets me in every room.
Mm.
Every room that we want to submit, we leave with that script and I get it.
Oh, cool.
So where I was going with was this. During the time when we were, and it's been optioned like four times, like people mm. keep getting big people too. Even Mona Scott wanted it
oh,
at one
okay.
point. So short story. So we either leave with that script or we don't. But here's the problem. When we first came out, it was like, this script is going to be that $2 million script. Everybody's going to want the script.
Mm-hmm.
And then it became, ooh, I don't know. In this climate, do we want to see people get this and this?
Mm.
But here's the thing. Everybody who said it didn't read the script. So what happens in my script as opposed to the other scripts is it ends with, we can rebuild.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. It's not just they get bombed and all this
yeah,
other stuff. And my script takes place over 24 hours when it started and when it ends.
Okay.
We the lead up to it and all, and it's centered around the whole group. It's very ensemblist. It all comes mm-hmm. to fruition with one mm-hmm. main character that leads the way to, we know it's torn down.
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to do next?
Right.
Well,
right.
bitch, I got a shovel. You know what I mean? It's that spirit of it
yeah.
all. But the people who read it are like, oh, there mm-hmm. is hope.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? So it's like one of those things where I'm still battling, crossing that path
mm-hmm.
in this climate. All the kids are like, oh, I don't want to see that shit.
Yeah.
And all the executives are those kids. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? That are that age. So anyway, that's been
yeah.
interesting.
Yeah, I think it's sad that it feels like it's like a everybody's jumped on the bandwagon and I don't want to see a slavery movie or right. I don't want to see that. But that those movies tell our history.
Yes.
You know, and I it's agree. Important. And then when we don't see them yep. and you're not teaching it in the classrooms.
Actually, yep. deliberately erasing it from the classrooms, right, actually. Right.
And so they're detached,
yep.
you know, and then when things come up in present day, that kind of will repeat those things that went on then, right. they don't recognize it. And so there's no urgency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think I'm not afraid of a slavery movie. I'm like, you know, as long as you're going to tell them, you know, in a different way, something unique.
I've written like four of them, so yeah. it doesn't scare me at all.
Yeah,
I think that like that's a part of the thing, like what you're talking about, telling a different version of them. Mm-hmm. Because I think mm-hmm. there is something around Black, Brown, Indigenous mm-hmm. people that our public and our audiences, especially our, I'm gonna be honest, the white audiences have been mm-hmm. Trained to, even if it's unconscious bias, mm-hmm. to be desensitized mm-hmm. to Black and Brown pain because they see it all the time. You know yeah. what I'm saying? Like it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So like even before like George Floyd and you're seeing everything on camera, it's like I think Will Smith is one of the first famous people that said it, but it's like all this stuff, this shit has been happening.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
been happening. It's just now we have cameras, so you're forced to look at it instead of us just having to live it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like a lot of those things where they're showing like these extreme experiences by us and our pain and what people are calling like the trauma porn and stuff mm-hmm. is partially because that's what's almost required mm-hmm. to get those audiences that have that who are desensitized. I'm not even going to try that word right now. To feel something, mm-hmm. to feel some empathy. I think that is actually, which I say this all the time, Hilliard knows, like, I think that that's a hallmark of like traditional Western storytelling that builds upon yep. that
mm-hmm.
because I think that people who have become either desensitized or that mm-hmm. the world caters more to that so they don't have to experience the extremes of that
mm-hmm.
still need the emotional dexterity
right.
to just in case something happens that they can do that. So I think that's a part of why we create stories and mm-hmm. we create art is to do that. We don't need that shit. That's a part of the reason why I don't write it. I was like, we don't need that. They may need that, and we may need to still have those stories to wake them up.
Mm-hmm.
Like without like, you know, Killers of the Flower Moon mm-hmm. or like 12 Years a Slave. There mm-hmm. are
it's
some
the point of view that's important.
Yes, yeah. yes. And there's yeah. some people in those other groups that would not have noticed it or taken it in otherwise
mm-hmm.
that actually do need to see it that way, where it's right. just as brutal, just as all those things. I don't think we necessarily need that, but I do still think we need stories of our ancestors' history.
Yeah.
We need to speak up because it's all been so erased.
Mm-hmm.
You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? Like it's we need to see those tender moments. Like we need to see like our resilience has been in our ability to transform
mm-hmm.
and to find joy and to find connection with each other mm-hmm. and community through insane amounts of horrific treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And we have found ways to do that, right? Mm-hmm. If we don't tell any of those stories, it's like all that, like it's like it happened in a vacuum and it's like everybody's coming in without a blueprint or anything, but it's like you see your ancestors and a lot of like the people, both my mom and my dad grew up in the Jim Crow South, like the mm-hmm. Deep South in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. Like the stuff they saw in the everyday, there was a whole bunch of crazy shit that went down and stuff that yeah. happened. There's also mm-hmm. things like some white boy touched my grandmother's ass in a movie theater and she slapped the shit out of him. They got very quickly out of that theater because they could have killed them all.
Right.
Right. But they still had those moments. And if we don't ever tell the stories that include
mm-hmm.
them,
mm-hmm.
it's almost like that part of our history and our families and our ancestors are erased.
Exactly.
And I think exactly. that's a problem. Like, but there are other moments, mm-hmm. other slices
mm-hmm.
of things that I think we can tell.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like there's the story of the first. She was a little girl and she became a millionaire.
Which one?
I forget her name, but she was like 10 years old or something, and mm-hmm. somehow she became a millionaire. And I think it was right after slavery times.
Okay.
And I was like, that is so interesting. And I'd heard about it before, but never anything like substantial, but I think that story needs to be told. Stuff like that. You know, there's so many things that we went through as a people that, you know, that it's not slavery, but it's, you know, shows
it's still our history.
What we went yeah. through. Yeah. yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's several of those actually interesting, like the generational wealth situations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not all of us had access to that, which mm-hmm. we all know all the reasons for that.
Mm-hmm.
But like you look at places like Atlanta
mm-hmm.
and parts of Georgia where you see like there's a lot of Black folks with generational wealth in those areas, right? Or like there was something that I was researching for a project I'm no longer working on with somebody, but there was this woman who basically worked, I don't know, remember how what capacity she worked for this white man in back in the day in California. And he basically gave her stock tips and she kept investing and investing.
It's one of the stories that I'm actually working
on. And she made all this money and bought all this fucking property in San Francisco. And made so much money, but almost nobody knows that story exists.
She's the one who funded James Henry, is that his name? The guy who did the abolition?
John Henry.
Yeah.
She funded it. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Just like, I mean, there's also, like, if you look at
she almost went broke on it.
Oh, my goodness. Interesting. Madam C.J. Walker.
Got it right back.
Go girl. I like that. Know the stock tips. Know how they gonna go. Madam C.J. Walker's daughter, who inherited stuff, like, she funded a lot of the, who we call the talented 10th now, right? Like, she created salons and places and basically patronage, like how they used to do in Europe for artists, for Black artists in New York. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many of those that, like, we just haven't even began to dig into. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We have a... So me and my producer partner wrote this script about Cathay Williams years ago, and Cathay was known as being the first, you know, first documented Black female Buffalo soldier. So in order to escape slavery, she went and fought with the Buffalo soldiers, right? So the folklore on her is that she became this huge, you know, gun-toting, you know, whatever. But the real reality is she got hurt very early and was more like the cook and the seamstress.
Yeah.
But she took that when she got out and built this business where she became super successful.
Yeah.
And people don't know that.
We had that story come across us. Yeah.
And so we...
And I have a friend who actually wrote a script about that story, too.
So we'd written a pilot about her. And one of the things that we do is we call it going down a rabbit hole. Where when you go into research mode, especially historic stuff, when you are tackling somebody who's real, especially Black folks, there's hardly any information.
Yeah.
So you have to create what it is. It forces you to go down a rabbit hole to study somebody else to learn, oh, well, she could have been there at the same time.
Right.
So in that reality, we started learning about these people like the 10-year-old person and the fact that, you know, the real person who did the Madam C.J. Walker being stole the thing, whatever. Yeah. And we started learning this thing. And we're like, what if there's a whole show based around all these different people?
Oh, so that'd be good. That'd be fascinating.
So we ended up doing a proof of concept audio podcast on it, which centers around a little girl meeting her father, and they go on a train ride from the East Coast to the West, and she gets on and off the train and meets these people, and we hear their story over. So we started with Cathay.
I love the concept of that.
I like that. Yeah.
I'll send it to you.
Oh, cool. Yeah. That's kind of like you we can do a reimagining of how things went down. Right. Like what was the movie with, they did, Malcolm,
I know exactly what you're talking about.
What's the name of it? I can never remember the
One
name
Night
of
Miami?
Anything. Yes. Like that. Like, I love how they put that together.
Shout out to Regina King.
Shout out to Kemp. that's my dude. He's been on the show. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So like the way we can put things together like that to reimagine things, and, you know, what if Harriet Tubman was hanging out with Sojourner Truth, you know, and they just going through their day-to-day stuff, you know, like something like that.
Like,
you know?
I still want to write something eventually, Frida Kahlo and Josephine Baker were lovers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they were lovers, and Josephine Baker was also working for the resistance in World War II
as a
spy. Like, I was like, that would be just like, I just love them both, and it's delightful.
We might have to co-write this one.
That would be amazing.
You know, I find all the queer, bisexual, and polyamorous stories in history, because they'd be erasing us too.
That'd be amazing.
I think that's why I'm drawn to, I'd say out of the 40 something scripts I have, 14 or 15 of them are historical, you know, going way back. I'm like an old soul. We talked about it. I'm like an old soul. Like, I always go back to the past.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons is this. This is just a fascinating thing, which is why I was like, you got to tie into why you're attracted to the spy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
For me, there's a twofold. I like underdog stories.
Okay.
Being the underdog, growing where I come from and all that. I write those stories. The other part of it is I feel like I'm an old soul who came from the 1800s. And so whenever I'm digging into those rabbit holes, I'm like, I've been here. Like, I feel it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's why I'm not as scared to attack it.
Exactly.
You know?
I'm kind of the same way because I studied, you know, Pan-African studies in, in school. It was my minor. My major was TV production. So I took a gang of Pan-African studies classes. So I'm like very, you know, tied to our history. That's how I love it. Right. I can never get tired of a slavery movie. You know, if you're going to tell a story, tell it, you know. But yeah, I'm the same way. We need to keep our stories alive, you know. That's how I feel about it.
Facts.
Yeah. Find all those nooks and crannies where they didn't let us be because they just erased so much of us.
And
the last thing I was going to say about that project, we show you how they were slaves, but how they came out of it. And everything. And some of them weren't slaves.
Yeah.
You know, some of them were free who became successful.
Yeah. And they fought back. That's the people tend to think we just laid down and was like, oh, okay, we're going to be slaves and we can't do nothing. Like, that's why I love Misha Green's show, Underground.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love Underground.
I love the way
so
she
much.
Did
I was
that.
So sad.
Misha.
That it did not move on.
She's one of my favorite writers.
I love her. But I love the way she did that show because she showed them they were fighting, they were kicking ass. They were like, we are not going to lay down and take this. And,
which is what I did in my Tulsa.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, all the guys are like, fuck this shit.
And they made it fun and sexy too in parts of that were good. Like, I just remember watching the pilot of that and hearing like as he's running and then hearing like how they wove in the breathing with the drum beat and I was like, ah, shit, this is about to be something.
It was fire.
About to be something. It really
she
was.
She writes that shit is on the page.
And Lovecraft Country, like both of them, I was
stressed out. Like, I was watching Underground. I was so stressed. I was like, oh my God, what are we gonna do now? Okay, wait. You know.
Oh, no. My favorite scene when she took him down into that cellar,
White
and started beating his butt, doing like that sub dom situation, I was like, "Yes,
fine ass master,
you better find your power."
she writes her butt off. I was like, with Lovecraft, I was like stressed out with that. I was like, oh my God, she just leaves you stressed out, but in a good way. You want more of it.
But in Lovecraft, you also got to see them. Like move through the stressed out moments, but into things where they found like
stillness
and a way through. Do you know what I'm saying? Where they were still won in ways in that world, which like, I think that may be the key. Like, you know, I've been trying to figure out this way of like building my skill set at decolonizing some of our storytelling structure. And I think some of that is like taking it partway to the edge of like what traditional structure would do and then just doing something different than what it did, which is what I kind of see in Sense8. It's what I saw in like Lovecraft Country. It doesn't follow just a traditional thing, but you get some of it, but then it switches it up on you. You almost don't even know it's coming, you know? And I think that that's something that people are craving now and they don't realize they're craving it. And it happens, I think, more in certain international storytelling, and we don't realize that either because a lot of people aren't watching stuff internationally, even though there's like now you really can find, like, you get like Netflix has like so much stuff from all over the place, and like MHZ, if you like subscribe to that app, it gives you like almost every international TV show that they don't license here.
Really?
Oh yeah. And you can put English, and it's got clear English subtitles. You can watch in like Todart. They've got like this French.
I'm saying I watch like, a lot of the French stuff. Usually, what's ever on Netflix.
I'm trying to remember what the name of it is. It's it's Allison. It's a detective show. Like it's a detective show situation that
they
it's
have
going.
Amazing detective.
But, and it's a fun like procedural. That's like I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. Like. Right. It has all of them. So you can kind of just go through and find different stuff, which I think helps us to expand the way we tell stories here.
Indeed.
Yeah.
I told you we call the rant room. We'll be going off of the Roslyn, let me talk to you about you being a director of development over there. What type of things do you guys do at Edmonds? And
what's your mandate, girl? What's your mandate? we want to know.
Well, we take anything, really. No, not really. But kind of open to pretty much any type of genre, any type of TV show or film. We haven't delved into horror. We've had like a few scripts come across our desk. that Tracy was interested in. So I wouldn't say we're not doing horror, but if you have something interesting enough, we would. Mm-hmm. Me personally, I don't do horror because I'm scary. I saw The Exorcist in its original run, and I was like, no, ma'am.
You're okay. Like, I'm complete with this. This is not my ministry, friends.
I agree with you. I don't fuck with paranormal, but I love Monster in the House. I love more zombie, vampire, werewolf.
Not me.
I'm cool with.
If it's got a monster in it,
yeah, I don't. I'm not into horror unless it's like elevated horror or like something that has to do with like it's introspective, like Get Out.
Psychological.
Yeah. But even like Get Out was psychological, but like even like all of Jordan Peele stuff, I think, is way more interesting because it's making a different like commentary on the world and the way it's using the genre. Mm-hmm. And the blackening, I fucking love. That shit was hysterical and also used all the great tropes, right? Sure. But those are the only kind that I really watch. I don't go out like, jump scares, not my thing. Like, I don't need all that blood and gore, right. Not my thing.
You know what I mean?
But creatures, like, I love vampires and mermaids and most of my shit got fairies and angels and shit in it. Like, I've got like
that kind of stuff, yeah.
But I love that.
A monster, I'm not, nah.
So I was telling Rosalind offline that I listened to her podcast. Tell people what your podcast.
Well, I have a podcast. It's called A Wordy Girl Entertainment, and I interview people either they're in front of the camera or behind the camera. It's centered around writing, but basically anything that has to do with the business. Mm-hmm. So I've interviewed a few people. I've interviewed Tracy, of course, and a couple of actors.
You just did Kelly Edwards recently, too, didn't you?
Yeah, I did Kelly Edwards. Mm-hmm. That was like a couple of years ago, though. Mm-hmm. But yeah, writers, directors, actors, you know, whoever. Mm-hmm. So I'm in the process of restarting it because I kind of, you know, get a little, I need to be consistent.
It's the hardest thing.
Like, yeah.
We just dropped episode, like today we're going to be dropping this one. We're going to drop episode, this is 485.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know what I mean? And I actually have like almost 500 already.
Ooh.
But they're bonus episodes that I don't count.
Mm-hmm.
It's the consistency. What I found is the only way to sustain it is to record ahead and drop slowly.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, you'll be too busy to drop them regularly.
That's the problem that I run into. Mm-hmm. Like I get really busy and then I'm like, oh, I haven't done anything yet and got to get back to it. Right. So yeah, I got to get them in the, a bunch of them in a can, you know, and then go from there.
Yeah.
But I like doing it. I like, you know, interviewing people, talking to people about the business. Right. So yeah.
Well, while you got us on, talk to us. What you got to say?
Well, once upon a time, no, not for us. But yeah, so back to your question about, you know, what we do at Edmonds. So Tracy tends to like dramas dealing with family. Right. She really wants to do a romantic comedy. So if anybody, you know,
surprised y'all ain't had 500 of them hit y'all desk.
I know. Well, stuff comes through, but you know,
you gotta be the right one.
Be the right one. So she's looking to do another one since, we haven't had one since Jumping a Broom.
Okay.
Mm. So yeah. So she really wants to get one of those out. Yeah, pretty much family dramas, those kind of things.
Is she more female-driven stuff, or what's her thing?
Not necessarily, but if it is, you know, showing, you know, women in a positive, empowering light, so definitely. And then we're also open to, you know, different reality shows also. So we have a lot of, it seems like a lot of those have been coming across our desk lately.
And like what moves you guys in reality? Like what type of things? I'm just asking for people who are going to be asking me.
So. Let's see. Something that brings together like polarizing personalities.
Right.
Something that's like fun and kind of young spirited, not necessarily young people, but just something upbeat, something kind of surrounded around pop culture, things like that.
Okay.
Yeah, because right now we have College Hill,
right?
Celebrity Edition. So we just wrapped on the third season. We just wrapped that up. We filmed that at Xavier University in Louisiana, in New Orleans. And so we're working on the next season of that. But yeah, as long as it's stuff that's like, you know, lighthearted, you know, we don't want anything that's, you know, built around throwing drinks in people's face and, you know, and you know, I like those. I watch all the Housewives shows. And, you know, I like the dirt, but
you're like, I'll watch them, but we're not going to produce right. them.
Right. But yeah, things that, you know, where people are doing something, you know, mm-hmm. whatever that may be. So that's what we're looking for. Right.
Is there in the type of, like you were saying, romantic comedy, but like mm-hmm. in the dramas that are family centered, mm-hmm. is there kind of a through line in the theme that you find that you guys are drawn to in that thing? Like, you know, family dramas have different kinds of things mm-hmm. they do, like father son things. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's this, sometimes it's families coming back together, sometimes mm-hmm. it's revealing secrets, sometimes, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, is there anything that tends to stand out that repeatedly comes up as things that you guys are like, yes, that thing?
Long as it's showing realistic things that families go through, you know, like we don't want like the Leave It to Beaver type stuff. You know, some stuff is unrealistic. You know, you can get in there and get heavy and really talk about family issues. I think that's what people want to see, real life situations, not stuff that's just like made up or stuff that's buttoned up at the end, you know, so mm-hmm. to say, but something that does leave you thinking that there is hope, but you know, you don't necessarily have to get a Leave It to Beaver moment out of mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, they get, okay. So it doesn't need that Hollywood ending bullcrap.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. That
but
makes
you, it sounds like you want some bit of hope or uplifting, yeah, some but like kinda, even if it's not
yeah.
a straight up happy ending, mm-hmm, but there is some mm-hmm. sort of like uplifting something in
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like with Soul Food, how, you know, it ended with the family, they were torn apart because mm-hmm. of, you know,
the family fucked my husband.
Right. And even she was there, spoiler if anybody haven't seen it, but she was there at the end. You're like, okay, so they resolved that, you know.
You just find a way. I mean, you want some bullshit, but right. you're still family. You can have dinner. It's still Thanksgiving.
You can't come to my house no more, but, you know, you can come have Sunday dinner
for
over
sure
here.
I ain't gonna leave you alone with my man.
Right.
You got to sit at the kids' table, but...
So some kind of hope.
Okay, yeah. That makes sense.
That's actually another show I missed, too. This TV show. The series, that came out yeah. The series was really good.
Yes, it was. It was like one of my favorite. I was like, mm-hmm. oh, I didn't want to see it go.
And and for you with your writing, like mm-hmm. where do you eventually want to be? You want to be writing TV and film? You want to be writing more TV?
Where probably more TV. But mm-hmm. like I said, I'm cool with both, but probably more TV. I just find it like more interesting, more intricate. You know, like you get to mm-hmm. tell that longer story and you know, you can see the characters change over a period of time, mm-hmm. you know, so I like that aspect of it.
Do you feel like your experience being the DOD has positioned you better to be in a place where you would rather, like, just create a show and run the show or something like that? Or what do you feel?
Yeah, because, like, when a lot of new people or new writers, they're always like, oh, I want to be a showrunner. And, mm-hmm. and I'm like... do you really? Because that's not just you in charge of the show. Like I'm in charge of what goes on the script. That's a whole bunch that goes with that. It's basically
you're
admin.
Hardly in the room when you
yeah. It's basically admin. Yep. You have to run yep. that show, and if you're not natural at running, yep. it's like running the company. Yep. You have to know what you're doing, how to run people. Manage people, manage the budgets and all that kind of
problem
stuff.
Problem solving. Listen,
problem, definitely
I know
problem
how to
solving.
Do it, but I still want my apprentice to my Issa. Listen, who actually, like, we get each other.
Yes,
they can handle the shit so that it's, like, a more of a balance and I can keep creating. And, like, some of that problem solving, I can absolutely do it because I created the Cherry Bomb I produced sure. with somebody for 5 years. But I still want... I want my person that's going to do
good. The things. I mean, I think we all do, you know what I mean? Even though I know how to run a show, too, I would rather still have a dope-ass, you know, mm-hmm. number two, mm-hmm. somebody who's really good at not so that I don't have to be overseeing the budget as much. I want to make sure we could just check in and see what's going on so I can know what's what. Because I hate looking at the numbers. I've been a line producer. I don't like it. It's not fun.
You and me, but listen, I know how the numbers work.
Yes.
I don't want to do that. That's again, that's not my ministry. It's not that I can't. It's that I don't want to. It takes
Absolutely.
It takes more energy from my brain and my spirit than I think is useful for anybody.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like, it's better if my attention, my energy go to the things that only I can do. Like I'm kind of an idea machine almost. Well, I always say an idea doula. Things just become and they just become and right. Like, let somebody else who's like can crunch.
Yeah.
Do the crunch and let me come up with solves for like story.
Ever wonder how to bottle up pure excitement, unbridled joy, and limitless potential in a single word? Woohoo! Woohoo Apparel is on a mission to unleash the infectious energy of woohoo onto the world. And they're doing it with undeniable style. I'm talking cool, fun designs made of soft-combed, ring-spun USA premium cotton and 50% polyester, and in sizes from small to extra large to fit all Woohoo enthusiasts across the globe. Get your t-shirts and apparel at WoohooApparel.com and use the promo code WoohooSRR. That's capital WOOHOO, lowercase SRR. Links in the show notes. Like, yeah, I'm much better at looking at the budget and going, you know what we can cut? Remember that scene where we do such and such? We don't need to be in there. All we have to do is, we already in the hallway. All we have to do is, like, I can see it and it'll still be beautiful.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's where I usually go, we can save money right there, bitch. We don't need that boat. We don't need that. They just standing by the dock. They don't need to get on the boat.
Yeah, I just want to focus on the creative. That's what I want to focus on. I don't want to deal with the day-to-day, like, because I already do that. So I'm like, I'm trying to get past that and, you know, like, let somebody else handle that side.
Blossom to your next...
Exactly.
Hey, all
right. Exactly. Claim it.
I love it.
I just want all creative. Like, you know, I just want to sit at the desk and read all day and, you know, read scripts all day and give notes and stuff like that. Like, I love to give notes. Yeah, I'm like, the admin side, nah.
Do you have any pet peeves that you see in projects that come across your desk?
Ooh, do I?
that was clear and specific. What are they?
Because here's the thing. Tracy, bless her benevolent heart.
That's a t-shirt.
We'll let people submit unsolicited stuff to us.
Oh.
So.
No, don't be doing it. Don't do it. Don't do it.
I think it's too late, and Tracy's the boss. She's the boss.
Yeah. Right?
She has to feed through them, though. Right.
So we get a flood of things, and, you know, they're new writers, so, you know, what are you going to do? They're new writers. So a lot of the time, they don't know. Just the process or
the format
or anything. The craft or anything. I've got some funny stories that
please tell them, because now I am intrigued.
Without mentioning that.
Without a name.
Right.
Don't give specifics about that would identify the project. However, now I am enduringly curious about what this is.
Right. Like this one person, they... you know, I was getting all kind of calls from them. They kept calling. Did you read it yet? Did you read it?
Oh my God, no. He does that. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry. That's awesome. Sorry. I'm sure there are people who are doing that who just don't know, but people don't like that.
Yeah.
Sorry. Go on.
That's okay. So I was like, okay, you can send us the script. He didn't want to email it. This was like,
he didn't want to email it.
Yeah, this was like this. Now, was granted, this was.
Sorry.
He wanted to drop it off.
It was in the earlier 2000s, so like everybody wasn't quite so on email with the scripts and stuff. So he wouldn't email it. So he was like, "I'm in town for the week, and I really want to come by and bring it." And I was just like, "Okay," I let him bring it by. He comes up to the front desk.
300 pages.
And he took it out and it's like, thump.
Oh.
It was like this thick. I was like, wow. And I was sitting there, and I was, and at the time, I think I was doing dual duties as the receptionist, so I was at the front desk that day, and I was like, oh. I was flabbergasted. I was like, I was trying to be nice. I was like, so is this, this is one script or,
did you write an entire season of a series?
Wow. It's my novel.
And then I picked it up and I was like, oh, it was like 200 something pages.
It had to be.
I was like to myself, I was like, what is this? Roots the extended remix? Like, what is this?
You said Roots the remix.
The extended remix, okay? Ooh, I was like, child. Oh, no. So I was like, okay, well, I'll take a look and get back to you kind of thing. And some people would call and they'd be like, you know, we let them know, well, you can submit a log line and a synopsis. Mm-hmm. And they'll be like, what's a log line?
Oh, no.
And I'll be like, oh, man, yeah.
Just say yes and Google it.
Right. It's like Google is your friend. Like, they will
talk
never.
Talk to a friend.
Mm-hmm. It's like, if you want to be a writer, there's nothing wrong with being new and not knowing. But before you approach a company, there's a whole lot you need to know before you approach a company about it. Like, that's like a note, because when you approach a company, you're saying I'm ready to be produced, my project to be produced. Mm-hmm. So if you don't know what a log line is, it's like you have no idea about the craft. Yeah, you're not ready. You have no idea about the craft. Then I would get people that would be hostile toward me when I would send them a pass letter.
Oh,
this one guy called. I'll never forget this. I told him that we were going to pass on a project. Wasn't a good fit for us. He was like, why? This is a story about, you know, black people, and we need to see black people and, you know, in a good light, and y'all put out stuff. And this was when Who's Your Caddy came out. He's like, and y'all put out Who's Your Caddy, and look at what kind of movie that was. And I'm like, sir, you might not want to insult the company
that you're trying to get to give you money.
Right.
Sir.
Crazy.
You think that's going to make somebody write a check?
Right. So all kind of crazy stuff. It's like, and then, or I would take the time sometimes and give people a little feedback.
Uh-oh.
So also bless your benevolent little heart.
Right.
That's awesome.
Right. That's the writer in me that I'd be like, well, let me give them a little nugget or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be like, maybe you should, you know, check out this book, read this book, give you some pointers or read a couple of scripts or something. They would, like, call and be hostile towards me. I don't need to take no classes, you know, and, you know, why do I need to do that? I know how to write. And I'd be like, oh, wow. Like, I don't
You're
know.
You're way
if it
nicer than I.
Yeah, and this is the thing.
And I'm nice.
And I so actually appreciate that you guys have the hearts to do that, and apparently the bandwidth, which is a beautiful thing, because I think a lot of times, especially other writers of color, we don't always have access to the same resources or the same information.
Sure.
Even with Google, sometimes people don't even know what to Google. What, like, there's some groups I'm on that in the communication I find asking questions that I'm like, what? Like, this is stuff that they could look up.
That's
or like
ridiculous.
Things like that. But I try and find my way to be more gentle about it. Mm-hmm. But it's also like, and don't put it public.
They look up how to do the makeup, bitch. Why you can't look up how to
do it? I don't put it in there. But like, there's other groups I'm in that don't have as many of us in it who it doesn't seem like people
access.
Interact that way. Right.
Yeah.
But I think that part of it is access. Part of it is like, we're used to, like, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong. There's people getting paid to do their Tubi movies and to do their things. Like, they're making their money and they're distributing things and they're getting to tell their stories. You know what I'm saying? But I think that there's, like, a divide in what we think we can have access to and to the understanding of the pathway to get there. And like, even, like, what terms to try and find to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that there's, like, I know that a lot of people, like, live by Save the Cat. I fucking hate that book. I'm just, like, not, it's not my thing. Like, that kind of, like, more rote, by the book, structured thing is not me. But also, like, I play with time and everything. I'm a nonlinear storyteller. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, you know, it just isn't for me, right? Mm-hmm. But other people, it's very much for them. Mm-hmm. And I think culturally speaking, some of that stuff is really not targeted to us. So, like, mm-hmm. for some people, probably digging into it, it feels very disconnected. Mm-hmm. And unless you have, like, a teacher that can kind of bridge the gap mm-hmm. or some way, I think it may be a more up, feel like an uphill battle besides all the things that we deal with on an everyday basis in this country, just trying to stay alive mm-hmm. and the microaggressions mm-hmm. we deal with in an everyday thing. But I wish it was better. Like, I wish that there was more something. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you guys are doing some of that, but I also think that that's a lot of emotional and stress labor that if you needed someone to say, girl, you've probably done enough.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
I was like, you've done enough. You've done enough. Not to be rude, but like, you've done enough. Like, you've given that, mm-hmm. and there's sometimes where if you're really moved mm-hmm. because you're trying to get yourself to the place mm-hmm. where you can put more of your stuff out.
Right.
So, like, you've done that for them, and now you can lean into doing what you need to do mm-hmm. for you and let mm-hmm. them find a way through it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because the resources are, there's a lot more resources out there. Like, just listening, like, when I've been writing since I was, like, 8, but, mm-hmm. like, you know, when I started to be like, okay, I'm good at certain parts of this, but I'm not great at structure. Like, structure is mm-hmm. just not my jam. Mm-hmm. But it's, like, not a lot of people's jam. Like, finding a way to get through that, even though it's, like, you feel a lot of resistance if it's not your thing. I started listening, like, to this podcast mm-hmm. and listening to script notes and mm-hmm. listening to The Screenwriter's Life and, mm-hmm. like, anything else I could get a hold of mm-hmm. that would even, whether I agreed with it or not, that I could just take in information.
Yeah.
Information about what other people were seeing, other people were sharing, like, their mm-hmm. their pathway to it, because everybody has a different pathway, right? Everybody has a mm-hmm. different way that they dig into story or get out story, right?
Mm-hmm. Completely.
But I can, like, listen and, like, say, oh, that totally resonates with me, or that mm-hmm. that doesn't resonate with me, but that's cool because I can mm-hmm. see that they do that differently and they see it differently. Mm-hmm. I just wish sometimes we could do better and that there was an easier way to help move that forward besides using your emotional time and labor.
Right.
I always think, and I've been gone from the hood since I was 17, 18 years old. Mm. I got to say, when I got out, though, you do see the access that white folks have that we don't have. Mm. Even if it was as simple as I did a theater show in my elementary school and middle school in my black neighborhood. Mm. And then I came to my white high school and I was like, oh, they got real props. They got a real stage designer.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Whatever. It's you just, if you don't know,
mm-hmm. you don't know.
Don't know.
Yeah.
But, and I will get a lot of people listen to the show.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people who are new mm-hmm. and a lot of people who are just like us who are doing the game.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know, start with looking it up first.
Yes.
Here's the thing. Think about it this way. I was just talking to a young writer the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know why I like you? He said, what? I says, I know you're new to the game, but I could tell not only did you look me up and to see what I do and blah, blah, blah. I said, you also came in here prepared enough to go, hey, I don't know how to do this, but here's what I looked up and saw.
Right.
What do you think about that? I'm like, I want to help you.
Yeah, it's like show that you are willing to research, do your own research, do something. Like, you just can't be like, oh, I just want to write and I got this idea and here you go. You know, like, mm-hmm. it is a craft. It's, you know, I think most people see the end result, the, you know, on the big screen or on the television, the glamour mm-hmm. of it, the fun of it, the celebrities, the actors, whatnot. It is an actual craft, you know. There's techniques.
It's a village,
you know. Yeah, exactly. There's techniques to writing. There's structure. There's, you know, and you gotta couple that with the creative part.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's both creative and it's both structure. So
the other sorry to interrupt you, Delia.
No, it's fine.
The other problem that just occurred to me, what you were thinking, what you were talking about is, I'm not against you reading Save the Cat. I've read it,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
right? But I'm one of those people that I believe you have to know everything. But mm-hmm. that's just me because I didn't graduate from high school. I didn't, you know what I mean? I didn't go to college. So I was one of those people where I was like, well, there's a new book. Well, bitch, I better read it.
Mm-hmm.
But what I learned was, so that's how you do it on that one? okay, well, what if I did? Okay, I'm still good. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And for me, it was about, because I was teaching at the Organization of Black Screenwriters back in the day. Mm-hmm. I wanted to know what everybody was talking about.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to be the one going, I have no idea what they're talking mm-hmm. about. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, I read that one. I read Pilar's book. I read Jane Crisanti. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I was just doing it to know what was going on. But you also get a little gem or two.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Where you can figure it out. And the thing that we don't have today, I was talking about this on the last podcast. I went to go speak to some students two Thursdays ago at CSUN College.
That's my alma mater, CSUN.
Oh, my cousin's there.
And we did this long, like, hour and a half Q&A where they could just ask me anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling them, somebody said, so Hilliard, what would you do differently today if you just started or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, it's almost hard for me to answer that question, because when I started, I remember I started at 12, you know, I was an actor like you, and I stopped when I was 32, 33.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, there was no real internet in 2000, 2001 when I started writing. And I said, so I can't even talk to that guy anymore. I had to go to Screenwriters Expo. I had to go to Pilar's class. I had to write this play and see what happens on the stage. I had to do all these things that you don't even have to do anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's, and I hate to use the word that's so much easier for them, but bitch, it is.
It is. Because, like, back, even in, like, the...
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
Even, like, in the earlier 2000s, like, scripts weren't available like they are now. Like, now you could just look up a script and study it. Like, that's one of the recommendations I tell people. Read scripts, because it lets you know, like, what it looks
and
like
on the
page.
And not just the ones you want to do.
Right,
Especially if you're not in L.A. Like, L.A., you can go to the WGA and, like, go read them in the library. But, like, for people who didn't have access to that before, I mean... The blessing, because I've been an actor for over 20 years. Like, I read scripts all the fucking time. Like, so, like, it was like it wasn't something that was, like, foreign to me, because it's a part of my craft anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's interesting that what you were saying about the being able to, like, you read all the books and you did all the things. Like, I did go to the grad school, and I have an insane amount of debt for jobs that you absolutely did not need those degrees for, right? But most of what I learned in them is to trust myself. Like, I learned, like, tools to use. And it's like, it added, as an actor, it added to my actor's tool bag. Just because I observed, I took some screenwriting classes at CalArts, too, and just observed different things. But I also realized, like, I didn't trust myself. I always trusted other people who I thought of as, like, no, well, they're the real writers, because I've been doing this, but my focus has been on acting. It hasn't been on this, even though I've written all these different things. It just, I didn't consider myself at the level. My ex-husband was a writer.
That's right.
And is a writer, actually, and a filmmaker. But, like, and so I didn't listen to myself. Like, I thought that, like, I was somehow not doing the right thing, or I was missing something or whatever. There was something I didn't see with my taste. Like, but it wasn't. Like, I actually had and do have really good taste. I actually am good at telling story, even though it may not be the same, like, it may be different than some other people's story styles, like, learning to trust that. But it's like, I don't think, like, you're talking about, like, talking to your younger self, I don't think you can get that without the experience of going through and realizing, like, oh, no, I'm good.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, no, I'm no. No, my stuff is on point. I know, you know what I mean? It takes time sometimes to do that. And I think to your point, what you were talking about like, it's a craft, it's a skill. It's also, you're shaping like clay, or like how that quote about, like, putting, people keep attributing it to Jordan Peele, but I think it actually is somebody else who originally said it, but like that you're putting sand in a sandbox to sculpt the castles with, right?
Yeah.
But it's like, when you first fill the box, it looks like trash at first to you if you have good taste. It's like that Ira Glass quote. Like, your taste is a certain way, which is why you want to write, or why you want to tell story, or why you want to make a film, or whatever. But your taste doesn't match maybe your favorite filmmaker or writer who has been doing this for so long, so that you don't see the shit that they made when they made their first film in the sandbox. You know what I mean? You're not comparing yourself to Steven Spielberg's, like, first short film that he made when he was 8.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying? So, like, you're looking at it, and even when you get out a draft, like, that's,
It's a, y'all, whoever's listening, it is a blessing just to finish something. Absolutely. That is the hardest thing for you to do, is to get from the beginning to the end. Like, most people don't finish. It just sits there languishing, and you only get through part of it. If you finish, you should give yourself a celebration. Then you go in and you start looking at the things that you maybe want to fix and start sculpting the clay. The whole point of having the first draft is so that you can start sculpting it into something that looks more and more close to what it is that you like are envisioning it to be. And also, usually, at least, and I'm very spiritual, not religious, but very spiritual. I'm intuitive. So what I'm also listening to is what spirit's guiding me towards, or little things that pop up for me that, that guide me in ways to sculpt the clay. Yeah. Like, my intuition is like very much so, like, I intuitively write everything. Then, you know, we'll edit to things to make sure other people understand what the fuck I'm saying, even though my fairies and angels may say it one way, they may need to, some clarification. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
It's, you have to get through those moments where you think it's not good. And trust that you can make it good.
That was one of the best lessons that I learned from a screenwriting class that I took. He told us, give yourself permission to write shit. Like, take all of the, oh, they might not like it, or, oh, I don't, maybe it's not a good idea. Like, get rid of all of that. Just put it on the paper and get it done. And get your first draft out. Worry about everything else later, because you're going to have to go back in and rewrite. So, and that's another thing I come across. People who don't like to rewrite. Like, you don't like to rewrite.
Most people don't like to rewrite.
You have to get out of the business, because that is all about rewriting, especially.
They think it's ready to go.
Like, especially television. So, like, though.
I think,
like,
most folks don't like to rewrite, but you know you have to rewrite.
Yeah.
You know?
The key is to get somebody to give you the notes, whether it's an executive or whoever, the producer, that enhance the script. That's the trick.
Yeah, because a lot of people are afraid of notes, or they just hate notes in general. But it's like, yeah, you do have to be getting notes from the right person.
Because there's an art to it.
Yeah.
You should walk away feeling excited about taking these next notes.
Exactly. Because I think the way I give notes is, I'm not here to completely change your story. Like, if you had a story about a little boy who stole his bike and he got to get it back, I'm not giving you a, I'm not giving you a note like, well, why don't they steal your baseball collection instead? Like, that's a different story. Like, why would I give you a note like that? Like, the note I would give is like, okay, his bike gets stolen. He's got to get it back. Well, maybe instead of him calling people to get it back, maybe he just goes out and runs around the city and and interview people. Have you seen this bike of mine? Kind of like that kind of note, because you're still giving them the sense of he has to get his bike back. You know, you give him different ways to go about it, not something completely that's way over here. You know, that wasn't even a part of the story. So, like, yeah, some people don't know how to give notes. So I always approach it from the standpoint of, what are you trying to say here? What do you want to come across here? And then I help you get to where you want to go. Those are the kind of notes I give.
Sounds good, because not everybody's able to do that. I think it's like, it's a clarifying thing. So a lot of times, most of us are looking for the note under the note when we're getting notes from somebody, because it's like, okay, if this is bumping for them, even if whatever solution or whatever note is, like, that's not necessarily the why, but they're bumping. So it's like, okay, so what's going to help so that they don't bump? You know what I mean? Like, I've had, like, a couple, I do some fantasy and some stuff that's not fantasy, but, like, there's, like, one of my fantasy things that gave, like, one of the magic rules, like, definition, like, it had it, like, three or four places in it, because people kept saying they didn't remember it or didn't, and then they'd be like, you know, you didn't really explain that. I was like, it's in there three times. But it's like, but that's not the note that it needs to be in there a different way, right? So, like,
I read, it's how you did it.
Yeah, it's like, I read the Expanse script, and I saw they just fucking put the definition, like, they just did it bolded with a whole bunch of stars.
Such and such.
This and this means this, and it's like this in this world. And then they stopped bumping, and then I think it was even the same fucking person gave me the note. You don't need to say that many times. You don't need to, you know, explain the, sir, But okay. At least I know it worked. At least I know it worked.
Yeah, people are real resistant to notes.
Like, yeah, I think it's hard because you spent so much time and mm-hmm. it feels like it can blow it up. Like, mm-hmm. there's the screenwriter's life has this thing. It's like you get notes and you're like, fuck you, fuck me, fuck. Like, it's like yeah. you go through the three stages, and then you get yeah. to work on
right,
it. Right,
right.
And it's like, ah, that means they didn't get something that was mm-hmm. really important for me to have them get.
Right.
Okay,
right.
So now how do I fix it?
Yeah, because I think when you're writing, you feel you're so close to your mm-hmm. project that sometimes you can't see things mm-hmm. that other people can see, or you think you're getting something across, and it's not really yep. coming across.
Mm-hmm. But there's also another thing that happens. Mm. I was saying earlier about how the script is the puzzle. Mm-hmm. The puzzle is something you as a writer have memorized. Mm-hmm. Like, you know every word, mm-hmm. every description, every action, mm-hmm. every transition. And somebody is saying, hey, I didn't quite understand why the character did such and such. You're going, what are you talking about? The character
it's
did
like
this.
It's like all over there. It's all in it.
But my rule of thumb is to backtrack. Mm. So I go backwards mm-hmm. through the script. Mm-hmm. And I go, okay, because this happened, that happened. Mm-hmm. Because that happened, that happened. Because mm-hmm. that happened. Oh, I took that out in the last version.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So sometimes there is something that mm-hmm. I just didn't. Sometimes you just got to kind of put a hat on it and mm-hmm. be like, mm-hmm. here it is. You mm-hmm. underline it. You bold it. Mm-hmm. Whatever the thing is to make it, especially if it's something important. Mm-hmm. And that's why they came out with the whole trick of, if it's important, just capitalize it. If it's a name, just bold it. Whatever yeah. it is so that mm-hmm. it stands out so you don't forget. Mm-hmm. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So that's what I've learned is like, oh, I just need to plant that a little bit mm-hmm. more yeah. so that you remember as you come across. Remember, there's mm-hmm. sets, there's 50 pages in this thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know it because I wrote it.
Right.
I can't expect you to remember what I wrote when mm-hmm. you read it in two sessions.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I think one of the important things, I think, for new writers, because most of your audience is new writers, right? Correct.
Oh, I have showrunners listen to the show. Yeah.
So one common thing I find in scripts that people send to us is that the main character is passive. They're not doing anything in the script. It's just like it comes off as a day in the life of this person. Mm-hmm. You're just following them around and like see what's going on. Mm-hmm. Like, no, you give your character something to do. What are mm-hmm. they doing? What problems are they solving? How are they, you know, in charge of their life or what's going on mm-hmm. right now? But I see a lot of scripts where the characters are just, oh, okay, well, we're going to do this. And okay, we'll go over here. But it's like, okay, what
meandering.
Yeah, through. just going through the yeah. daily life.
They're not active. They're
right.
active.
Like, yeah, like yeah. in a Linklater kind of way where it's like after sunset or before sunset where they're like just walking and talking, or is it like...
Yeah, it's like sitting around just having a bunch of conversation yeah. about not anything. Like,
yeah.
Like, okay, what are they doing? I want to see them doing something. Like, not just talking about you're going to go and find your bike. Like, go and find your bike. You know? Mm-hmm. Like, what streets are you got to go on? What bullies you got to tackle? You know, mm-hmm. like, I don't want to hear you talking about finding your bike. Right. Like, mm-hmm. have the character actively go and find the bike, you mm-hmm. know? And then what does he experience in yeah. going and finding that bike? Mm-hmm. Like, that kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. I see a lot of scripts come in like that.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's like, I'm like, oh... Is torture to read. It's torture. Like, I love you new writers, but yeah.
I don't know. The thing for me is, here's my thing. Mm. And I don't mean to get in trouble with any of you film schools or anything. You do not need to go to film school to be a writer or a filmmaker. You don't.
No, you don't.
You don't. Mm-mm-mm. Now, I'm not telling you not to do it. Mm-hmm. Here's, in my opinion, I think you said a version of this. Here's why you need to go to film school if you decide to go. Mm. It puts you in a room with a bunch of other people who think exactly like you think, mm-hmm. and one of them might make it. Mm. Your job is to figure out which one.
Right.
It's like it's building a sense of community. What I will yeah. say is like...
Because it might have been you.
Yeah. It's good for networking, yes. which is yeah. very important. You do need that part.
And doing that peer thing, not just the like trying to network up. Like I went when I was at CalArts, but and I did something different than what, like I was in the acting program, but I made a point to get to know the people who were in the directing for theater, that's film, smart. And television program, and to volunteer to do their projects, smart. Even though they tried to get us not to do that. I was like, if I have to do it late and just do whatever, and then come after rehearsal at 11, I'll just do that, right? And I'm still friends with some of those people. Like one of them is like in Ryan Murphy's camp and like doing all of his. You know, things like I've got several friends that are like films at Sundance that like, and you keep those contacts and then you have community that you keep moving up with.
This like, is exactly you what know, I'm talking about. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, but you don't have to pay $60,000 to CalArts to get that, but it does give you a microcosm to be in where you are strictly studying craft and that you're able to do it. And I would say to anybody who does choose to go to film school, one, make sure you start building those relationships and maintain them. But I also had a friend, and I have to say he went to undergrad there in acting and then went to grad school for film at CalArts. And one of the things he did after watching the other people go through the program is he decided that any class project he did was going to be something that he could submit to film festivals because he had the equipment. Honey, listen, after his first year, he won the student Oscar.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and he's been working in commercials.
This is what I'm talking about.
Since then.
Yeah.
And one of those people in that room is probably going to make one. Your job is to figure out which one.
Yeah.
But that means you have to spend time with all of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you and sorry to interrupt you, because you're the actress, right? Let's just generalize back then. And you're not directing and producing like you are now. So back then your job was to figure out which one of those directors can I get in so I could be in their movie so we can, as they grow I grow, right? That is your job. So you can go to coffee, you can do whatever, but you should be meeting everybody in that class. If you walk out of the class and you don't know everybody, that's your fault.
I would add a caveat to say don't always think of it as you've got to like find out who's going to make it because
the, context.
Yeah, yeah, I'm saying, but
I'm just saying one
but
of
I know
them
some,
might make it.
Yeah, I'm saying some people will hear it that way, so that's why I'm clarifying that it's not transactional. You want to build genuine relationships and know that you have no idea where anybody is going to end up.
Right.
So like being kind.
Don't underestimate.
Being kind to people, being authentic with people, being like real. Like I have friends that like I just knew through like film festivals and hanging out that were really cool that weren't doing. Like, they were, like, maybe aspiring actors, and one of them is, like, the head of development for a huge company right now. Like, that wasn't where they were starting out at all. We just stayed cool. Like, I stay cool with anybody that I genuinely feel, like, a resonance with, that I feel is good people. I stay cool with them.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's not because I don't know where they're going to... I know they're going to be someplace or not going to be someplace, but it's because I like to genuinely be like that with people.
Sure.
But I've seen enough times where those people ended up in different places. I have a friend who was a casting director, but also used to work nights at this like high-end like bar restaurant as like a sommelier in the bar or whatever. And this actress came in being shitty to all the staff. I mean, horrible to all the staff. Rude, mean. And she just watched her do it all night long and then came over and brought the bill. And she's like, you're seeing such and such tomorrow morning at 10 a.m., aren't you? She's like, well, yes. She's like, yeah, I'll see you in the morning.
Ooh.
Wow.
You, I mean, you never know.
That's facts.
You never know.
Yeah. Well, I actually did not stay in contact with anybody I went to school with, but.
You're like, I didn't like none of them motherfuckers. Just kidding.
No, no,
don't
not
believe
there.
That, y'all. I'm sure she likes some of you. I'm just talking shit.
No, but it was. I got my contacts from interning, so that's how I got my contacts and did the networking and whatnot. But I think it's what was the point? I was going to make a point about the being in school. I think I lost contact with the people that I was in school with because most of them are not in the business.
Yeah, that happens too.
Yeah, that happens a lot. And because I'm like one of the rare people in the business who actually has a degree in it. And my degree is in TV production.
Right.
But the advice that I got when I was at school was because I was going to originally major in film. And I was talking to one of the counselors, and he was like, well, if you're going to major in film, you know, you are going to have to get into the fundraising at some point to make your film. And and all I heard was, I got to ask people for money.
I'm not a salesman.
I was like, no, I'm not trying to beg for money. No. And he was like, and actually, he's like, there's more work in television.
It's true.
So he's like, so you should, he's like, you could take some classes, some filmmaking classes, but I recommend majoring in television because there's more work in it. Yeah. And that was good advice. Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah.
They paid good advice. Mm-hmm. Little Miss Director of Development.
Because you're doing it. You're doing it already.
But yeah, but I'm trying.
She moved up to crew chief and stuff. Gonna meet the CEO cousin.
And I also have my own company. So I'm looking for my first project to start shopping on my own. Sure. Like technically, you know, if somebody comes to me with a project, you know, I take it to Tracy first, kind of like an unwritten first look kind of deal mm-hmm. with her. Because, like, of course, I'm going to take it to her first. Yeah. If it's something that she's not interested in, then, you know, I go and shop it on my own. So
girl, what's your mandate?
Well, I like strong stories. You know, like mm-hmm. I said, if you got a spy story, I'm all on top of that. You know, mm-hmm. some kind of espionage, black mm-hmm. ops type stuff. Mm-hmm. I also like serious dramas, so mm-hmm. And like I said before, if it's female driven, you know, mm-hmm. empowering women, like I love that. Those are my main areas that I love.
Features or TV?
Both.
Okay.
Both.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When I was listening to your episode with Tracy, mm-hmm. I was thinking for a second, and you know this, I wrote the story of Sylvester, the disco singer. Mm-hmm.
It's so good, y'all. The script is so good.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Like, and I really was like,
yeah, I want to check it out.
I'll send it to you. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about, I was going, boy, Tracy's really good at doing those soundtracks and shit. Mm. I was like, I wonder if she could handle a movie like this. So I was like,
yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, we have one music thing that we're working on. I won't say what it is, but we can't get past the licensing for the music. Right. So that's been the holdup. So yeah, it's like always so hard with the music part.
It's complicated. Like we got to the lawyer who owns his rights. It's not the family.
Oh, wow.
It's the lawyer. But we did reach out to his sister and them and stuff like that. So we at least have that information. But so we can get that thing with the family, you know, the okay. But it's... the lawyer is the key. And he's like, how much y'all gonna give me? We'll go. And I'm like, so we gotta start there. But that's a whole other situation.
Yeah.
You know,
how about the music side? Are you guys, you got the publishing?
Yeah, he has it.
Oh, he's in control of that. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. How he end up with that? That sounds shady.
You tell me. Somebody, well, he had bad contracts his whole life.
Yeah.
You
know? Mm.
So that's, I'm not even surprised.
Yeah. Yeah, the music industry. I like I said, I started in the music industry at Motown Records,
and right. that's
a whole other beast.
Yeah.
I think the DeBarges, they had a contract where they were told in the beginning they'll be given like $1 for album sold, per album sold. Mm. And I think they were told that, yeah, just think of if you sell 1 million records, you'll get $1 million, you know, kind of thing. Mm. And that did not happen. So it was like, oh, those deals back then were,
remember when you guys
horrible.
Went to the Four Seasons and you did all this stuff? That added up to $1 million.
Yeah, recoup. Recoup is the word that a lot of artists got swindled with that because they didn't understand, oh, yeah, you're making this video and you're renting a Lamborghini and you got the gold medallions and whatnot. That's coming off your money.
Yep.
So that whole arrangement was just crazy how the record companies did the artists. Like, how are you going to take... we'll still do.
Yeah, we're talking about like the marketing. Like, we get to take marketing first. It's like, you can make that number anything.
Yeah, like, why take it out of the artist cut? That is so, like, oh my God, that's terrible. Terrible business.
Yep.
But yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad, like, Megan Thee Stallion got hers where she got her publishing and stuff. And her deal. Like, I was like, yes, you go, girl.
Exactly.
You go, girl. Do
That's
it.
That's where the money is in that publishing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But see, you have to come in with having been in the indie world, already selling albums for the for them to agree to shit like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I think that she got screwed over by her previous manager people anyway. Mm-hmm. I think that Beyonce, Jay-Z connections would kind of help her to school her on some shit.
No, yeah, I'm sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much, Rosalind.
Ah, that's it.
This was dope. Thank you for hanging with me, Delilah. Appreciate you, little sis.
Yes.
Indeed, indeed.
Appreciate it. Love it all.
Yes, it was fun.
Glad to be back to play.
I'm so happy to be here.
Yes, indeed. Rosalind, where can people follow you? You're on Instagram, Twitter, your website, everything.
Yeah. Well, I'm not on... Well, I have a Twitter, but...
Most people like that.
I hate Twitter. I hate it. I hate it. It's the
well, whatever one you prefer.
The land of the angry. Well, I prefer Instagram.
Okay.
So you can find me on Instagram at WordyGirlENT.
Yeah. And check out her podcast.
Yes. My podcast. You can find it on wherever you listen to your podcast. I have a website, which is WordyGirlENT.com. And on there, I have, I do script consulting. I don't know if I mentioned that earlier or not, but yeah, I do script consulting. So, you know, if you want to.
And you got merch.
Yes, I do. I have t-shirts. I have t-shirts and mugs and computer laptop cases, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you need to, you need some notes on your script, or I also have a one where I just give advice. You can do it like one-on-one. Mm-hmm. We do an hour, and I give you advice on anything you need to know about the business. So go on there, check that out. That's but nice. Yeah.
Nice. Awesome. What about you, Delilah? Where you at?
I'm at Delilah Ali Raja on everything. On the Twitter, because I'm not using that other name. On the Instagram. I'm also at Black Queer Joy, because I founded the Black Queer Joy movement. So you can find me there as well. Blue Sky, although I'm not on Blue Sky as much. But I do have an account on there.
Somebody gave me the little pass. I haven't done it yet. Do you still need that anymore? Or can you just sign up?
I don't think you need it anymore.
Okay.
I don't think you need it anymore. No. But yeah, it's. I find that some of the people who were on the Twitter that don't like it as much anymore, like the people that we didn't have as much access to that are kind of like upper echelon writers who chose to go over there are more active over there because they don't like how Twitter went down or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's not as many people. So like part of why I stay on Twitter is because I actually really enjoy screenwriting Twitter and like people talking about their projects and seeing who got this on this contest or whatever. I actually like them. So
That makes sense.
Oh, it's good that they're still there because I haven't been on Twitter in so long.
Yeah. Not enough people went to any one platform for people who really use that for marketing their writing or for getting in touch with writers to get everything they needed off of another platform.
Yeah.
I just signed up to Snapchat like just a couple months ago. Oh, yeah. I don't understand it at all.
I like they still have Snapchat.
And I just signed up to what's the other one everybody
TikTok.
TikTok.
Yeah, I signed up TikTok to TikTok just so that I would reserve my name. I ain't putting shit up there yet or watching anything. I was just like, I realized I don't want nobody else to get my handle and then have to buy it back.
Yeah, I occasionally go on TikTok, but it just feels like a crowded mess. Like,
well, you have to, from what my kid tells me and my wife, who both love TikTok, you have to find what your thing is, right? So my wife is on like cooking TikTok and probably she really loves schnauzers. So like schnauzer TikTok, she'd be on, right? Like cooking for the dogs. My kid's really into like fashion and stuff that relates to neurodivergence and like art because he's a digital artist. Yeah. So most of his is that. Like whereas there's other people who are on like book talk. Like he talks about books and things like that.
Yeah, I have
I'm
been
sure
on that
there
one.
Is a screenwriter talk of some sort. But I have not found it and don't plan to look for it.
I'm a YouTube girl. I love YouTube.
I just post the show and I get 300 to 800 people just chiming in, which is it's better than all the rest of them.
Yeah, it does have
and my numbers
engagement.
Have went up.
Yeah,
since I went on, so it definitely does make a.
So
little
it
difference.
Is a good marketing tool, whatever.
Yeah, it has large engagement.
Indeed. And I'm your host, Hilliard Guest. You guys can find me on Twitter. I still say Twitter like I'm cool. Instagram, like I said, Threads, every single thing, TikTok. At Hilliard Guest. I keep it really simple. Also, we finally just got Screenwriters Rant Room on Instagram. I had it on Twitter for a long time and I cut it off. I was like, why am I doing this? Anyway, but everybody's encouraging me now that I got the new website coming and all that stuff. I just have to rebrand all
branding.
So anyway, you can find me everywhere at Hilliard Guest. Just punch it in. I'm there. Boom. Please go on iTunes, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, whatever you guys listen to, Spotify. We're all over the world. Please give us a 5-star review. We need that for the metrics. Please follow us, share the show, retweet, repost, all that. That stuff's super important. And somebody told me this is something you should know. I know you're not on Twitter, but you don't the likes are cute. You want them to retweet it. Yeah. Is what you want them to do.
Yeah.
So I'm always like, retweet, bitch. Retweet. shit like that. I'm taking off on Wednesday. I'm going to Provincetown nice. Just till Monday. We're scouting for this new feature film I'm doing called Mermaid.
Oh, wow.
About this little boy who wants to be a mermaid. He actually wants to be a girl. Mm. It's a beautiful, beautiful story.
Oh, wow.
And we're trying to do it to be like that Beast of the Southern Wild. We want it to feel like that beautiful small town. Mm-hmm. You know, it's almost like a Billy Elliot story, but it's not a dancer. You know?
Okay.
And a beautiful story. So we're going to go scout for that. And then as soon as I get back, looks like this show, because I've been texting with Cheryl, you know, Cheryl Bedford, and she's my line producer on this show I'm doing with Amazon. So it looks like we're finally going to be starting next week. So
we'll see. Cool.
So hope as soon as I get back. So we're like, she's like, we got to get the office together and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, let me look into here. We'll do, you know, so we'll figure it out. Anyway, well, thank you guys. I appreciate
you. Thank you for having me.
Indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you. Joining me, everybody, for... I forgot it already. See, that's what happened. Game all day.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you again to Delilah, Rosalind. Appreciate you, girl. Rosalind, I keep going. Heavy O. It's Ah. Rosalind, thank you.
Yes.
Appreciate you.
Rosalinda.
Yes, indeed.
Rosalinda.
You guys know how we're doing on the Rant Room. On the show, we keep it real. We keep it opinionated. We keep it what, everybody?
Game all day.
Peace, y'all.
I'ma say what I feel. And I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Rant Room. So you wanna be a rider, well you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminished and the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed in the rant room. We let that shit up off our chest. You never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the craft of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want. Welcome to the rant room. Oh yeah.